Instead of $10 a day, you'll get $30 a day, and it'll be in my palace. And the man got very excited. It sounds like a good deal. Very good. The next morning, the man came to the king's palace. The king took him to a nice, beautiful inside room, but the room was empty. There was no wheat. There were no plants growing there. It was just an empty room. And the king said, "This should be much easier for you because the room is nice and cool. There's no sun burning down. You won't get so schwitzy hot." And the man said to the king, "But what should I do here? There's no wheat to cut down." "Oh," the king said, "you take your scythe and you just swing it through the air as if you're cutting down the wheat. You make exactly the same kind of motions and moving your hand, and you pretend that you're cutting down wheat, but there's no wheat here to cut down. It's inside of the palace. But you will do the same work, and I'll pay you triple." Well, it sounded easy enough, and the man starts to swing his scythe through the air as if there's wheat there, and he's cutting, or he's pretending to cut, and he's swinging his arm back and forth, and he's going around as if he's cutting down wheat. And a very strange thing happened. After about a half an hour, he started to get so tired. His arm began to feel so heavy, and he started to breathe so heavily, and he was really schwitzing. "Why am I so tired? Why do I feel so heavy? Why is it so hard? It really should be much easier, because I'm not doing anything. When I work out in the field, I don't get tired like this until the end of the day, and sometimes by the end of the day, I'm not even this tired." Well, he went on about another half an hour, and he couldn't even go on. He came to the king. "King, I'm sorry. I don't think I can do this job. I'm too tired. I can't even go on." The king said, "Why? Isn't it easier? It should be a lot easier. You're going to get triple the money. Only an hour's gone by. How come you can't do your job?" The man said, "Look, when I'm out in the field, at least I'm doing something. At least I'm cutting something down. At least I feel like I'm accomplishing something. I guess that's why I don't get so tired. Here, I'm doing absolutely nothing. It's work for nothing. To me, it's the biggest torture. I'm getting so heavy, so tired, because I just feel I'm doing nothing. I can't go on. Even for triple the money, I can't do it. I'm sorry. I'd rather go back to my first job out on the field where I really was doing something. And it's worth me to do something for $10 than to do nothing for $30. I can't even go on doing nothing. I can't even do it." So Kinalach, that is one story about what is avodas perech. They made the Yidden work for nothing. You can imagine how hard it was for them to build and to work for nothing. It was torture. And then the other story, I want you to listen very carefully, because this is a very important story, also about the same Nakuda. Once there was a man in jail. And I might have told you this, but I'll tell you again, it's a very important story. The man was in jail, locked into a jail room. And the rule was, each prisoner had to work. So what do? One day, they came into this man's jail, they drilled a hole through the wall, and they attached a big, gigantic wheel inside of the jail. And they told the man, "Your job is to turn this wheel every day. Keep turning it from morning till night. And that's your job. Turn the wheel over and over and over. Keep turning that wheel." It was a big heavy wheel with a handle on it that he could just stand there and grab on and turn around and around and around. And the man wakes up the next morning that he has to start his job now, and he starts turning that wheel. It was heavy. And he had to put his koyach into it. He had to really work hard. And he's turning the wheel around and around from morning till night. And this goes 1 year. And this goes 2 years. And this goes 5 years. And this goes 10 years. Now, in the beginning, he starts to wonder, I'm turning the wheel on this side. I wonder what's going on the other side. After all, the wheel must be attached to something on the other side, because I'm working, I'm turning the wheel, it goes round and around. Inside of the wall where they drilled the hole is a long thing that's also turning. And on the other side of the wall, it must be doing something. It must be turning something. What could it be doing? He didn't have any windows. He could not see through the wall, of course. It's too thick. He couldn't hear anything. It's too thick. So he started to imagine, to think in his mind, what could be? At first he thought they must have dug a well in the ground. The water is way under the ground. And they need a way to bring up the water from the ground. So what am I doing? When I'm turning around this thing, there's a rope on the other end, like on a stick. And they lower the bucket way down into the water. And as I turn the thing around and around, it pulls up the rope, and it pulls up the bucket, and it pulls up water. And people are for sure coming to get water. And I'm helping these people to get water. What am I doing? I'm helping people to get water by pulling up heavy buckets of water from the well. And then when I'm turning it again, it lowers the buckets down again into the well. And when I'm turning it more, it picks up the buckets because the rope wraps around the stick. And I'm helping all these people to get water. And the people are taking the water home, and they're using it for drinking, and they're using it for washing, and they're using it for bathing and for all kinds of important things. So the man felt at least good that he's accomplishing something with all of his hard work. As the years went by, 10 years went by, a thought came into his mind. Wait a minute. Maybe I'm not doing that. Maybe I'm doing something else. What else could I be doing? And he got the idea. Maybe on the other side are millstones. Now, what are millstones? I'll tell you what millstones are. There is a thing or a building called a mill. They take the wheat that grows in the field and they want to make flour, they want to make bread, they want to make cookies. They want to make things out of the wheat. So first they have to grind it down. How do they grind it down? They used to have two big stones, like two big flat stones. They were round and they were flat. And they used to turn these stones around, or maybe the bottom one stayed still and the top one turned around, or maybe both of them turned around. But you put the wheat on top of the bottom stone. It kind of looked like a sandwich. On the bottom was a big stone. In the middle, they put a whole bunch of wheat. And on the top was another big heavy stone. They put the stones together and they started to turn them around and it would grind up the wheat. And this would make the wheat into flour. And the flour they would put into bags. And the bags of flour would go to the bakeries and go to the homes, and people would bake bread and bake cake and make all kinds of noodles and all kinds of things out of the flour, whatever you make out of flour. And it would feed people. People would eat. So the man thinks to himself, I'm helping people to grind flour. I'm helping people to eat. I'm doing very important things, grinding the stones. And for the next 5 and 10 years, he's grinding the stones, thinking that's what he's doing. It's already 20 years, he's working so hard. And by this time, he's an old man, working so hard. One day they come into the jail and they announce to this man, today is the day you go free from jail. He was so happy. They gave him a new suit. They gave him a little money. They opened up the jail door and they say, goodbye, you can leave the jail. You're free to go. The first thing that he wanted to do, even before he goes home, he wants to go out of the jail. He wants to go around the other side of the building and he wants to see, what have I been doing for these last 20 years? What have I been doing with my hard work? waking up early in the morning and turning that heavy wheel the whole day until I am tired at night. What have I been doing? Have I been pulling water up from the well and helping people to have water? Or have I been turning these millstones and helping people to have food? What have I been doing with my koyach the last 20 years? He ran around. He ran around to the other side of the building and he took one look and he had Nebuch, a heart attack, and he fell down dead. Wait a minute. He's a free man. He just got out of jail. What could have possibly happened in that 1 second that he took a look on the other side of the building that killed him? And the 20 years he was working in the jail, he was healthy. He was working hard, but he was healthy. Why all of a sudden, in 1 second, he died when he's a free man and as a prisoner in the jail, he's working hard and he's healthy? What happened to him? Kinnalach, I'm going to tell you. He looked and he saw on the other side of the building. You know what was there? Absolutely nothing was there. The stick was sticking out the other side of the wall and nothing was attached to it. Not a rope, and not a bucket, and not a millstone, and nothing was there. He was working for nothing. And when he found out that he was working for nothing, all of that koyach was going for nothing, this killed him. Because the worst thing is not chas shalom hard work. Hard work is very good. But when is hard work good? Hard work is good when you know that you're working for something. Your koyach is doing something, it's accomplishing something. Your work is going somewhere and you're doing something for your work. It's not chas shalom for nothing. And a person could work even less, but if it's doing nothing, kinnalach, it's a torture for the person. Wasting his koyachas, wasting his time, doing for nothing. He looked on the other side of the wall and he saw that his work was absolutely for nothing. This killed him. Now, this was the torture of the Mitzrim, to the Yidden, Avodas Perech. Their work was hard work, but it was for nothing. They built buildings that fell down. Now, of course, as long as we're talking about it, the Yidden were slaves in Mitzrayim to Paroi. Now, Paroi is also a part of the Yetzahara, who makes himself to be a king, and he puts the neshama into galus, into slavery, and he says to the neshama, you do what I want. Now, the neshama wants to listen to Hashem, but all of a sudden, Paroi comes and says, you work for Paroi now. And chas v'shalom, the Yetzirah can make a yid to work for nothing. You know what means working for nothing? Working for something means you're keeping Torah mitzvahs, you're learning and you're davening, and you're doing Torah mitzvahs. All of that is working for something. You're working for something good. But what about a person that is waking up in the morning and the whole day, he's working, but he's chas v'shalom not doing Torah mitzvahs, he's working for Paroi, and he's doing things that are chas v'shalom not for Hashem. Is that working for something or is that working for nothing? It's working for nothing. Because if it's not Torah and if it's not mitzvahs for a yid, if it's not what Hashem wants, then it's working for nothing. Because it means nothing. If a person does things and it's not Torah and it's not mitzvahs, and it's not to help Torah mitzvahs, what is he doing? He is working for nothing. He is swinging that knife in the air and he's not cutting anything. He's turning that wheel. He's working hard. But what is he doing? Nothing. Now, if he's working a whole day and he's getting money and that money is going in order to bring back to his family, they should have clothes, They should have food, should be able to go to yeshiva and learn Torah and keep Shabbos, and to have orachim and to give tzedakah. This is working for something, because the money is going for something good. But what about a person that's working the whole day, and he's only working for money in order to buy all kinds of things that he wants, and not to give tzedakah, and not to help anybody, just for himself, and just to do whatever he wants, whatever he feels like doing. This work, in the end, it's not going to get him anywhere. It's going to be working for nothing. Remember the story about what is really yours?
Yeah.
A person can get a lot of money. All of a sudden, it could disappear one day. He doesn't have it anymore. When the person puts that money towards Torah and mitzvahs, it's always going to be there for him. We're going on with Shmois. Okay. We're holding where the Paroi made the Yidden slaves. And we spoke about how he was so mean and made them work for nothing. Remember that what I told you, kiddies? And so now Paroi decides... Okay, Paroi says, I'm going for a ride in the Jewish neighborhood. And I'm sure that no Jews are going to be left because they're such slaves. And he goes for a ride in the Yiddish neighborhood and he expects that he's not going to see anybody in the streets. And all of a sudden he sees thousands and thousands of Jews and kids all over the place, tzitzis and yarmulkes all over the place, and then baby buggies all over the place, and mommies and Yidden and Kinneloch playing. Oh, Paroi got upset. My plan is not working. The more I'm making the Jews work, the more Jews there are. It's supposed to be fakert. I'm supposed to get rid of the Jews. Now there's more Jews. Have to do something else now. More. He goes back to Shlecht the Bilam, his officer. And he says, our plan is not working with slaves. We have to do something even more than that. So Bilam says, I have a good idea. Very good idea. As soon as a baby is born, kill the baby. As soon as the baby is born, kill it. That way you'll have no babies. You won't see Jewish kids if you kill the babies. And Paroi says, how am I going to do that? I'm going to run around and kill babies? No, he says. You call the midwives. You call the Jewish women that are in charge of having babies born. And you command those women to kill the babies. And since you're Paroi the king, they have to listen to you. And Paroi says, that's a good idea, Bilam. And now he sends his officers to call for the Jewish women that help babies to get born. And it's a mother and daughter. The mother, her name is Yocheved. And the daughter, her name is Miriam. And they were also named Shifra and Puah. Yocheved was the wife of Amram. Amram was the tzaddik of that time. And Miriam was her daughter. She was a girl of 6 years old. Miriam. And all of a sudden now, they comes to Yocheved's house, guards and officers from Paroi. You have to go to Paroi. Paroi wants to see you. And now Yocheved and her daughter Miriam, the six-year-old girlie, go to the palace of Paroi. And Paroi looks down from his throne and he says, you're the ones that help the babies get born? Yes. I have a command and you must do this. As soon as the baby is born, you have to kill the baby. This is what Paroi says. And all of a sudden, Miriam, a six-year-old girl, says, you are a mean man. You're schlecht, you're rotten. You're more rotten than a rotten banana. You think that we're going to kill babies? Forget it, Paroi. Never. Now, Paroi never heard anybody go against him. Whenever Paroi says something, everybody shakes and they say, yes, Paroi, yes, Paroi, yes, Paroi, yes, Paroi. This is the first time in his life anybody ever said something against Paroi. Paro, he got so angry, and his face turned red. And he right away says to his executioner guards, "Kill that girl. She went against me. She spoke against me. Nobody speaks against Paroi." And Kinalach, all of a sudden, Yecheved sees that her daughter is in great danger of her life. And she gets an idea. She says, "Paroi, excuse me 1 minute, but are you really afraid of what a little kid says to you? Here's a six-year-old girl, and you're a great king. I mean, if a baby starts to say something, do you care what a baby says? Here's a little girl, 6 years old. Are you really going to feel upset what a little six-year-old kid says? You mean she's bossing around the king? She's telling the king something? It's just a little kid." Now, of course, Yecheved knew that her six-year-old Miriam was a great tzaddikus, and she had Ruach HaKodesh also. But she didn't want to tell Pari that. She's telling Pari she's a little baby. Pari calmed down. He stopped jumping up and down. His face turned white now instead of red. And he calmed down. He says, "Okay, I won't kill her. But you go and do what I said, or you're finished." Now, Yecheved and Miriam leave the palace. And Miriam says to her mommy, "What are we going to do, mommy? Are we really going to do what Pari said?" "Never. Of course not," says Yecheved. "We're never going to do that. We're never going to do such a thing." They went out to the ladies who had the babies, and instead of Chas Shalom doing anything bad, they helped them even more than before. Like I put on the picture, they brought them Pampers, and they brought them food and stretchies and rattles and batis, and they brought the mommies things. And they helped the mommies to have babies. And a few weeks later, Paroi took a ride into the Jewish neighborhood to see that he got rid of all the kids. And he drives around, and everywhere he sees Yiddish Kinalach. Kitties playing everywhere with yarmulkes and tzitzis, and girlies dressed sneestick playing, and mommies with vagalas full of babies six at a time. And Paroi got angry. "The plan is not working. There's still Jewish kids all over the place. What's going on over here? They were supposed to kill the babies. Look how many babies there are everywhere. You see stretchies and babies everywhere. Vagalach. Mommies on the standing there talking to each other with vagalas." And now Paroi calls Yecheved and Miriam back to the palace, and he's very angry. "Why you didn't kill the babies? You didn't do what Paroi said." They said, "Wait a minute, Paroi, you don't understand. We tried to do what you said, but we couldn't." "What do you mean you couldn't?" He says like this. "It used to be that when a mommy wants to have a baby, she calls us and we help her. But it doesn't happen that way anymore. Yaakov, our Zaydi Yaakov, gave brachas to the Shvatim. And the brachas, many of them, were that the Shvatim were like wild animals. For example, one of them was like a wolf, one of them was like a deer, or like a lion. Yehuda was like a lion. Now, wild animals, when they have babies, they don't call doctors. When a lion has a baby, it doesn't go to the hospital. It doesn't have a doctor. You know what it does when a lion has a baby? It goes out in the field by herself, and she has the baby in the field. Wild animals, they have babies in the field by themselves. So since the Jewish women got brachas from the Shvatim to be like wild animals, they don't need to call us anymore. They just go out in the field, and they have the baby by themselves. So they never call us. So we couldn't do anything, because they never call us. This is what they told Paroi. And, of course, Paroi couldn't do anything, because what could he say? And he says, "Leave the palace." He left the palace, Kinalach. And Paroi says to Bilam, "We've got to think of something else to do." "Okay," Bilam says, "have to think of what to do. We'll have a meeting tonight, right after star time." "Oh yes, after star time." Now what is star time? Every night in the king's palace, he had Special magicians go out and look at the stars. They look in the sky and they figure out from the stars what's going to happen tomorrow or what's going to happen next week. And they would tell Paroi, for example, tomorrow Paroi should not ride a horse. He might fall off, the stars say. Or tomorrow Paroi should not eat chicken, because the stars say tomorrow Paroi shouldn't eat chicken. Or tomorrow Paroi should not go to a war. If he wants to make a war, he should wait till Thursday, not Wednesday, because Wednesday the stars say it's not good to start a war, only Thursday. They would tell all kinds of things from the stars. Okay. That night they went out and looked at the stars, and all of a sudden the star lookers, they said, look what the star is saying. There's going to be a Jew, there's going to be somebody born, and it's going to be a man, and he's going to save the Jews from Mitzrayim and take the Yidden out of Mitzrayim and destroy Mitzrayim. And he's going to be born, and it says also how he's going to die. He's going to die by water. He's going to die through water. Now, more than that they didn't see, because the stars don't show clear. They show a little bit blurry, and you have to try to figure out. But that much they figured out. And they ran into Paroi, star time. And Paroi starts singing the song, star time, oh, star time. And Paroi sits down on his throne. Tell me what the stars say. Paroi loves star time. Okay, Paroi, we're going to tell you what the stars say. And he told Paroi what the stars said. And he says to Bilam, what are we going to do about that, Bilam? Okay, Bilam says, tomorrow starts a new Gzeda. Every Jewish baby that's born, forget these two women killing the babies, your soldiers will go, and they will throw every boy into the river and drown every boy. Paroi says, why to the river? I like the river. I like to swim in the river. Well, it's set in the stars, the end of who this is going to be, whoever this is going to be, the end of him is going to be through water. So we'll take the baby and drown him in the river. And we'll make his end come through water. The river's made out of water. And Paroi says, that's a good idea. Tomorrow, every baby will be thrown into the river. And every day, until we catch that baby, and we don't even let him grow up, we'll get him as a baby. Okay, Kinalach. They started throwing the Jewish babies, and even the non-Jewish babies. They didn't know what kind of a baby it's going to be. That day, they threw every baby boy into the river. And after that, they started throwing the Jewish babies. They said, look, there's probably going to be a Jewish baby. We'll throw him in the river, not all the Goyish babies also. They started throwing the baby boys into the river. Every single day, the baby boys get thrown into the river. What happened to the little babies that got taken away from their mommy and got thrown into the river? Do you think they died? Melachim came into the river. They held those little babies and they schlepped them out of the river and they put the little babies into the fields. They couldn't go home because all over the place the soldiers were looking for babies. Every day they were going around looking for babies. The babies couldn't go home. They went into the fields and there were holes in the fields that went underground. The little babies went under the ground and they lived under the ground all together, and the Malachim took care of them. They gave each baby two stones, two rocks. One rock gave them milk and the other rock gave them honey. All they have to do is suck the rock and they have the drink and they have to eat. Now, if they were cold, no problem. Their hair grew long and made a coat on them. So they kept warm from their own hair that grew like a coat. And they stayed underground until they got to be big boys, bigger boys than babies. And Hashem put the smartness in their head to know exactly their address where they lived. Even though they left home as little babies, they were carried out by the soldiers, they knew their house. And when they got bigger, they came out of the ground, They walked home dressed in their nice coats made out of their hair. They knock on the door, and one day they come in and they say, they ask, who's there? Mommy, Tati, it's me. It's your little Yingle.